This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
A fun time.
Don't punish him like that.
The Punishator. Anyway. And welcome to another episode of the Spoiler Room, the last one for 2016. We welcome you all, my listeners, and we're going to do something a little different. Normally, these types of shows I normally don't quite do, but I am very curious because it was an interesting year. So we're doing a best of worst of 2016, and I have a great group of crew members here with me tonight to discuss what films that came out in 2016 that they found some of their best and some of their worst. Now, this might not be their top three or whatnot, but it'll just be just films that they, out of the collection of ones they saw, that they thought felt were some of the best. And the crew members tonight, first off, Mr. Astro Radio Z, you'll recognize those sweet, sweet pipes of Mr. Derek Carey. Hello, Derek.
Hello, Mark. Thank you for including me in this discussion.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. We're always glad to have you in the room. And next to him is Mr. Gonzorific. Yes, the lovely Andrew Shearer is here with us tonight. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, y'all. Lovely to be lovely. Hey, you know what I did? I ate all my candy before I got on here, so I don't make any noise.
Well, it's just that we get jealous because then we can't reach through the computer and grab some of that candy for
yourself. It's just weird to talk about movies and not eat some candy.
No, I understand.
It don't make no sense.
It doesn't. And next to him, the Bowtie Ferret, it is Paul Salzer. Hello, Paul.
Hello, everyone. Hope everyone's having a good night.
Well, we're trying. I'm glad to have you in the his house, if you will. And speaking of in his house, we have the one, the only, it is Scotty D is here with us tonight. Hello, Scott.
Hey, good to be here. Did it sound convincing? I tried to make it sound convincing.
You sounded almost like you wanted to be here. You did a good job,
Scott. Almost, so this close.
You're this close. Really appreciate it. Tonight we are going to talk about some of the best and some of the worst we've seen over 2016 that came out this year. And we're just going to dive right in tonight because Andrew wanted to say a little something just before he gives his list. He'll be the first one tonight to give his list. And Andrew, why don't you go ahead and just, you wanted to make a comment about something.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wanted like a moment of silence, but it's not for the death of like a particular celebrity. It's more of a moment of silence for our collective ability to respectfully observe the passing of celebrities. It's like my dog of 14 years died in March, and I had a close friend of over 20 years die in June. And you know what, like, no one ever said to me? No one went, fuck 2016 when I told him that. Why? Because that makes nothing better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's convenient to, like, dig a big hole and stick a sign in it that said 2016 and chuck all the bodies in it. But, you know, some of us find that kind of offensive. So I just wanted to say I hope – one of the things, I'm sorry that went away, our ability to show respect respectfully, but I do think it can be resurrected at some point.
Well said. Yeah, there is, I guess we can address it just recently, Carrie Fisher passed away, and just tonight, Debbie Reynolds, unfortunately, passed away. We've had a lot of deaths of well-known folks, and a lot of people are saying, fuck 2016, you know, and I don't think the people are directly blaming the year. I think it's just one of those where it's in the forefront because it is so noticeable that a lot of these notable people that some of us grew up with are passing away, and some of them too young. And so I'm not sure if it's a lack of disrespect as just people feeling that this was a rough year. And it's more noticeable, you know, so I'm not sure everyone who says that is, you know, meaning to be disrespectful. I think they're just making a statement that this is a notable year for them because a lot of people that they've grown up with, icons and such, have passed away. So,
So you don't think Troma's going to make a movie about a calendar that actually murders people?
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
Actually, that would actually be kind of interesting.
Calendars had titties, they would do it.
If they had breasts, Troma would be there.
Andrew, I smell a Gonzorific film in the making.
I honestly, that was almost our holiday movie, but I didn't know. Not to make this shit about me, but we almost did it, yeah.
No, but I mean, I understand what you're saying, though, Andrew, but I think sometimes a lot of people are saying that just it's more of a coping thing for them, possibly, to try to comprehend.
Mark, if I could toss two cents into the barrel, mm-hmm. or the ever-increasing empty pool, as we'll say.
Sure.
I honestly think... We are so like acutely attuned to this now because of social media. This is only like being respectful towards, you know, the passing of others is obviously a very natural and good thing. It serves a purpose. It allows closure, and it allows people to be able to remember and move on.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening now with social media is that this isn't just about remembering and showing respect. It's about narcissism.
Yeah.
This is my opinion, because I've been talking with my bud, Corey Adler, who used to do Astro Radio Z with me, about this all day today. Because there's, in the last few weeks, I mean, this whole year, let's be honest, there's just been a continual stream of people that we grew up with as celebrities and people of note just passing away, because we're reaching that age where these mm-hmm. people, they abused their bodies most of their life. They lived rock star lives, and now it's catching up with them. And now they're all kind of passing away because some of them just never let that lifestyle go. Let's be honest mm-hmm. about this. And now it's because of social media. And this is just my opinion. I mean, you guys can refute this and say whatever you want. Because of social media, it gives a voice to everyone because we all know everybody does 1.5 million selfies. Everything's about them. Mm-hmm. That they take this idea of let's respect the dead and let's show tribute to a level that makes it not about that person that passed, but about them.
Right.
And that's what, for my taste, I find it really distasteful. I understand. Please be respectful. Sure, these people were a part of your life and like made you think of things in a different way, and you enjoyed the time you spent together, be it through movies, be it through whatever media. But do we have to? How do I put this? Because I know you're trying to run a respectful show here, Mark, and I don't want to curse on it.
No, you can curse.
Oh, I'm going to later, so go ahead.
I'm so sick of star fucking. Mm-hmm. I am so sick of star fucking. And what ends up happening is when these people unfortunately pass, it becomes a big star fucking orgy on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really find it distasteful. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know what? Okay, they passed. Okay, good. Let's move on. Let's say this is very sad and let's move on. But it just becomes an ongoing thing because it never stops. It never ends.
It never stops. I think it started for when I first started noticing it was a while ago. Like, what was it, like 6 years ago or 7 years ago when Michael Jackson passed away?
Right.
And all of a sudden, everyone's like, oh my God, we always loved him. And I'm like, you guys were making jokes about him for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that were claiming it. And now when people pass, I will often post something and talk about like, oh, that's really sad. These were really good people. I'll miss them. I'll get angry sometimes. And, you know, like there's things in their life to celebrate and stuff like that. For instance, as we're taping this, Carrie Fisher said a lot about like, say, like mental illness and struggling. Mm-hmm. Which really resonates with a lot of people. It's good to bring those things up, but I think that I would agree with you on like that, you know, so many people make it about them and they pretend like they were their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And how am I going to go on now that they're not here? Well, how did you go on yesterday? You'll be fine. You know, it's somebody who means a lot to you. It's tragic they're not here anymore, but it wasn't a family member or anything like that.
Yeah, don't let their passing be in vain. Don't say, like Andrew said, don't say fuck 2016. It is the wrong way to go. A friend of mine, Adam Bartlett, that runs a doom metal label here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, made this amazing post today on Facebook about the fact that you need to pick yourself up by the bootstraps and be thankful for what you do have, and that this was not a fuck this year. It's not the year. It's about your perception on life and how you take these things that happen to you and be strengthened by them and persevere. My grandfather died the first half of this year, and it was a very hard passing for me. I mean, he's the last grandpa that I'll have.
Yeah.
And I still think this was one of the best years I've had, to be honest. So I just find the whole, and it's social media in general. It's just a toxic place for the vast majority of people.
It is. I mean, I am going to be very, I'll be, just to put that out, this out there, I will be very happy to see this year go. I often think that the most worthless holiday in the world is New Year's, because I'm like, what the hell are you celebrating? The calendar resets. So what? You know, the next day is the same as the last. This year, I'm kind of into the symbolism, because it was just a really rough year, you know? And I was saying that for a lot of times. And I have something happening early on in the next year, hopefully, that will spin a turnaround. So I'm all about, yes, this year, for me at least, sucked really hard, both in a personal way and in kind of a more national, global looking at the state of the world in general kind of way. And I'll be kind of looking forward to maybe like starting from scratch and say like, okay, how can we fix it? You know, but yeah, it's this, if 2016 sucks, yeah, all the people that you like that have passed away is one part of it. It's not the main part, and it's certainly not even the biggest part, because we're going to start losing more and more people because of age.
Well,
you know, but the fact that it was a dark year for some of us, a lighter year for some, and I'm all into that symbolism right now. But yeah, I mean, I get it. It's because any other year I'd be like, yeah, this it's doesn't make any difference. And now I'm just kind of like, I'm clinging to whatever symbolism I've got at this point. And I think that there's some people like that, but there are some people who they turn it into something trite.
Yeah,
you know, I think what pushed me like over that. The edge was seeing a meme that had Lemmy with his finger up that says, you know, good riddance 2016. I'm like, dude, he died last year. You don't.
Exactly.
As of the day we are taping this is the 1 year anniversary that he died.
Yeah. Yes. 2015, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
So,
all right, yeah, sorry, man.
I mean, no, it's a good discussion. It relates to film because a lot of film icons passed away. You know, it's something I think about. I post online too occasionally if it's someone who I think is significant. While I have that feeling of, you know, fuck 2016, I fully recognize that, you know, that people pass every year and whatnot, and that, and, you know, I'll post something if someone had touched, like Carrie Fisher. You know, I pretty much grew up with her in my childhood. So 2.5 years old is when I saw Star Wars, and so through my childhood the strong female character I grew up with was Princess Leia, among, you know, a couple others, but definitely her. So it kind of, you know, it tinged a little, but I didn't post because I think some people are posting because, oh, this is the trending thing.
This is the new one. Now everybody. We got people who have never seen Singin' in the Rain who are talking about Debbie Reynolds.
Right.
And we've got people who talking about the guy who played the Heat Miser passed away. It's like, oh my God, how can this happen? Like, you haven't seen that since you were four.
The best version of ourselves is not typically the one we hit social media with.
It's still sad. Come on.
No, but no, I do see your guys' point. I think the sincere folks get buried underneath those who are doing it for, as you say, the narcissism, unfortunately. So I know personally for me, this year hasn't been the best for a lot of things that happened personally for me, especially near the tail end here, some things going on. So yeah, I'll be happy to see kind of the reset button on the year as well. But, you know, just because it all depends on the person you affect. I think icons have been passing for years. It's just that now that we have this outlet, and it's one of those things where it's kind of in the forefront, people almost are looking for it.
No, people just are always looking for attention.
Right.
Let's be honest. It doesn't matter what it is. It's always we have a platform and a spotlight to, and we think because we have a number that's next to the word friends, that these people care about everything you have to say.
Yeah.
And also I think that because there's a lot of people that do seek the attention also, that almost feel obligated every time a celebrity passes.
Yeah. They want to be the first one.
I better post like three things in a row about how much they meant to me.
That goes along with the whole, if, you know, even if you have a friend or someone, a distant friend or someone who had a relative or something passing, you know, some people I think feel obligated to say something because, oh my God, if I don't say something, you know, what will they think, when obviously, you know, that person may not even care because they're mourning right now. But, you know, while they might appreciate your, you know, our condolences or whatnot, I think some people feel like, oh, I better, otherwise, you know,
right,
you're going to hear it later that I didn't post on social media that I send my condolences.
Yeah, let me see the research on Healing Vibes, by the way.
Yeah, and again, you know, just like for the people who post the things about the famous people who pass away, no, if they really did mean something to you, by all means, you know, share it, right, and everything like that, and honor them and stuff like that, but don't make it about you.
Right. Yeah. You know? Exactly. Exactly. So, Paul, did you have anything to add to the discussion on the passing of film stars and such? Since that was a part of 2016 this year, was it seemed to be one of the topics. So it kind of fits our episode here.
It's just the usual thing that I basically echo a lot of how you guys feel. I do feel that a lot of people, when they say they suddenly, it's like they remember this person after they pass away. It's like, where were you when they weren't, while they were still here? Why didn't you every day post something? Why wait until they're dead to honor them? You know, that's the only thing that upsets me. And that's why I don't tend to post anything on my social media about that sort of stuff. Maybe I'll do a condolence or you know, oh, I remember how this affected me, you know, like, you know, maybe it was the first movie I saw with this character, and what did it mean? In that aspect, I do tend to be a little bit narcissistic, in that I like to put my own thing in there. But I think that to me is justifying it. I'm basically saying, this is what it meant to me. This is what this person meant to me. And that's it. I don't want anybody to like say, hey, look at me because of this. I just want them to say, this is how I feel, and I'm letting it go, and I'm fine with that.
At least you put some thought into it, man. That's all I'm asking for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's instead of just saying fuck 2016, it's like, you know, like for me, I posted Carrie Fisher because my experience with, you know, being young and growing up with her, and Debbie Reynolds, who was in one of my all time favorite musicals, Singing in the Rain. So I posted a video from one of the dance routines from Singing in the Rain, you know, for her, and that's it, because it's a fantastic routine, the Good Morning song. I sing that.
Oh, love that.
I sing that quite often. So, you know, I think it's intent versus I think the sincere people out there tend to get buried a bit by those who are just making it about themselves, unfortunately. And that's the social media that happens quite a bit. So excellent point and topic, Andrew. Thanks for bringing it up, because that is, I think, something that is relevant to our best and worst of 2016.
Yeah.
Not just films, but just the environment in general of where we watch films and discuss about films. So.
Good for the old time capsule here at the spoiler room. Or the editing floor, depending on your discretion.
Yeah, I'm cutting all of this out. Fuck you guys. Fuck 2016. No. Well, anyway.
We could probably all make a prediction that by the end of 2017, there'll be enough people that have passed away that people will say fuck 2017 as well.
Well, yeah. The stars have, I guess my final thought on this is, and then we'll move on, but is the stars, famous stars that have been passing away all the time. It's just that now we have so many outlets and exposed to so many sources where these people, you know, still reside in that they're still up front in many people's minds, are still in the light or whatever. You have access to their material 24/7. So I think it's just more in the forefront now only because there's this outlet for you to realize it. You know, a lot of these times before the internets back in the day, it might be in the entertainment center section of the newspaper, you know, and who reads the newspaper? You know what I mean? Not as many people read the newspaper as who's on the internet. So I think that is too the fact of we've had many icons pass away. It's just that many of the icons that have passed away this past year are icons of the generation who's been part of this technology boom and the advancement of social media and such. So I think that's why you see more about it. You know, I it'd be interesting, you know, people during when the plague was starting, I don't think people during the Black Plague were going, fuck 1895.
But it would be funny if they were, right?
They were scrawling it. They were going to trees and just etching it in trees.
Who did this Ricketson shit?
Hashtag buried another child.
Wow. And on that note, Andrew.
Yeah, dude.
Why don't you present us what are three of your favorite, what you feel were some of the best films that you saw this year?
Okay, well, I don't know if you want me to give the best and the worst all in one thing.
Just give the best right now, we'll do, and then we'll swing around to the worst.
All right, homie. Well, my three best movies, I'll just give, because I did a top 10 for work, but I'll just give the three top. Three would be Ghostbusters, which I saw 10 times in the theater. It's the most I've ever seen a movie in the theater since Pulp Fiction was out. My number two is Lemonade, which is technically a Beyonce record, but it came with a full-length movie that like kicked my ass for like 4 months straight. And then my number one is Moonlight, because it wasn't just like the best movie I saw the year, but it's pretty much one of the best movies I've seen in my whole life. So that's my three.
Awesome. Now I've seen one of those three. Lemonade sounded interesting when you were talking about it before. Has anyone else here seen Lemonade?
I wanted to see Lemonade pretty bad after, Andrew, you had written that article and you really put it out there on your podcast and all that. The moment you put that stuff out there, I went to HBO Go and they had yanked it like the day before.
That's weird. Well, I mean, if anybody wants to see it, basically what happened is if you buy Lemonade, the album, which is pretty cheap, the movie comes with it. Mm. And it's the same if you do the download. The movie comes with it too, and it's just basically like a long thing that goes with every song. It's a whole movie, and it's got, I mean, every one is like a short, you know, I'm a big fan of short film medium. I make them and stuff, but it's just like, it's so experimental, but the music is actually good too. And I was like, what am I, a Beyonce fan now? You know, like, it was crazy. I'm like, I can't stop thinking about this. It really had like a lasting effect. It was my number one mid-year, but Moonlight was came in and upset the whole thing.
So was Lemonade like similar to like a Moonwalker type of thing where it was kind of music video type shorts connected with a story or?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's all personal. So it's like, sure, a whole like epic odyssey, and the songs are different genres and stuff. I mean, I know it's a movie podcast, but I'm telling you, Lemonade flat out some of the best film work period I saw all year. It was just really, I couldn't quit thinking about it, you know? Mm-hmm.
And what's Moonlight about? I keep hearing people talk about it, but I haven't had a chance to look much on it. It's not going to show here.
Yeah.
Did you see it as well, Scott?
I did. Oh, it was really good. Sorry. Well,
go ahead, Dan. Scott could tell you about it, man.
No. It's not on my list. It's on yours. You talk.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a movie in three part. It's like three act structures used to tell this guy's story. Chiron. He is played by three different actors for the time. There's one that plays him as a kid, one that plays him as a teenager, and one that plays him as an adult. And it's basically about, like, you guys know, man. I mean, I don't really go after movies about men that much and stories about men. They're not typically my favorite type things, and I don't really, you know, I'm not looking for that kind of a story to be relayed back to me in my entertainment because I'm a guy, so I know. But this, for whatever reason, it just touches on the whole thing about expectations of masculinity, particularly in the black community, about the stipulations on being gay and how there's still homophobia around that stuff. But the performances and the scenes are just, they're done with this guy, Barry Jenkins, I think is his name. His hand is just so deliberate and delicate. Mm-hmm. Everything is just handled so note perfect, because you know, you all watch a lot of movies, you always do that thing in your head, you're just like, man, if they do this, they're gonna ruin everything, or man, they would be perfect, they just did this. That's a whole movie of just payoff every single moment. It's one of those things where I'm mind blown, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a classic movie. It will be good from the whole time I'm alive. If someone's like, man, you want to look at Moonlight, I'll be like, yes, that movie is great. There's people that are no longer here that I wish could have seen it, because mm-hmm. you know, there are things that just, there are certain moments in people's life and people in people's life that could just make it or break it. And right. all of the voices in Moonlight, all the experiences in Moonlight, it just all equals up to, it's not a soul crusher, man. It's transcendent. It just washed over you like waves, but it's all good. Like, there's mm-hmm. sad stuff in it, there's bad stuff in it, but it has a great positive ending. And it just, I don't know, man, I was transformed after seeing that. And I cannot tell you that happening of anything really that I saw even like last year or the year before.
Wow. You were talking about how positive it was when I saw this, Andrew. I was watching the movie in the theater, and I guess because so many movies from this year, I mean, if you look at even some of the good movies or some of the bad movies, whichever, a lot of them have been so downbeat.
Yeah.
And let's face it, the main character in Moonlight, who goes by his name is Chiron, but he goes by identifies under a different name in each segment. Yes. His life is so tragic in so many ways, you know, with his upbringing and, you know, the neighborhood he lives in, realities of his, you know, socioeconomic status, all that stuff, that I was just so scared to death that something, like, any moment something horrible is going to happen. I was just like, every moment I was worried that something horrible was going to happen. But you had to kind of see beyond that and see the heart mm-hmm. of this movie. And it's got a beautiful heart to it. I think in the first segment, I'm going to screw up the pronunciation of his name, unfortunately, but Mahershala Ali.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, who also, a lot of people, if you saw Luke Cage, you saw him play Cottonmouth on that show.
Oh, he's wonderful.
He plays a role that, if under a lesser actor, would be handled very much the same. He handles it completely differently here, and it's so good that I'd love to see him get nominated for some kind of Best Supporting Actor deal.
Yeah, he's great. Fantastic. I mean, there's one where Chiron meets him first when he's little, mm-hmm. and the guy's like a role model for him. At one point, he just straight up asks him, he's just like, how do you know if you're gay? You know, and the scene, you're just like going like, oh man, don't mess this up. Mm-hmm. Not just for the sake of the film, but for the sake of this kid, you know? And if the guy doesn't look like a guy that would give you the best possible answer, but he does.
No.
It's just great.
Awesome. Yeah. I've heard a lot of good things about it. I'm hoping it'll show a lot of those movies like that around here in Central Wisconsin show up in January, so I'm hoping that's when that shows up, when you get around closer to the Oscars and that they start releasing them here for a limited time. And I'm hoping to catch that one as well as a few others, because they didn't get released here because we have limited theaters, plus the audience around here is a little tougher sell for some films over the others.
I cannot believe y'all didn't get Madea Halloween.
Yeah,
oh, we got the D of Halloween. Oh, we got it.
Derek got it in Appleton area, but here we didn't get it here either in Point or Wausau. So God,
that was the movie that almost killed me. Like, I just lost. The breath just left my body.
Well, those are three good picks, good sounding picks, definitely, Andrew.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, Moonlight is one I really want to catch and hope to catch soon. So we'll go here next to Derek. How about Derek? Why don't you give us what did you want to bring to the table today as far as three of your best films you saw during 2016?
I thought 2016 was an awesome year for movies. This was a year that kind of rekindled my love for going to the movie theater. For a very long time, I've been very dismayed by going to the multiplex, because that's, let's be honest, I live in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, which is a very small town. I mean, it's about 50,000 people or less. And in the past few years, there just has been really nothing that I've wanted to see. And since I've moved here, the theater, which is a relatively small theater, has been showing all of these indie features, which I've been loving. Now, some people might go once they hear what I have to say, what movies I'm picking, like, oh, those aren't really indie. But to see these in Wisconsin in any way, shape, or form in the theater is a fucking miracle. So the three movies I saw all in the theater that I thought were wonderful were one, hands down, best movie of the year for me. I have never had a theater experience in which I've walked away so shaken that it took me an hour to calm down, was Green Room. Flat out, my favorite movie of the year. Just a masterful film. Absolutely loved Green Room. My second pick was perhaps the second best theater experience I had all year, and that was The Witch, which was, I think, one of the most tonally spot-on gothic horror films that I've ever seen. I loved that movie to death. And then three was a film that was very different than either of those two. And this may be the biggest budget of all the movies that I would ever pick. Probably be Arrival. Mm-hmm. And I thought Arrival, I'm a big sci-fi fan, but I'm mostly a fan of speculative science fiction, like science fiction that sits and really tries to go a little bit deeper than space battles and, you know, spaceships flying around and creatures and all this other stuff. While there are creatures in Arrival, it's much more about concepts of like existential questions that we have about our lives, about why we're here, about how we act towards each other and decisions that we make throughout our lives. And I thought Arrival was, it was 2 hours long and I could have watched another 2 hours of it. That movie, I just never wanted it to end. I loved it. So those were the three best I thought this year.
Those are great picks. Yeah. Green Room was on my top 10 horror for the year. Really enjoyed that quite a bit. Surprised me. Heard you talking about it. It looked interesting. You get really intense, really well executed, especially for, you know, pretty much a rather limited budget. It's great to see Patrick Stewart in a villain role. Who else here has seen Green Room?
I saw all of them. I was actually on Derek's episode of Astro Radio Z, along with a couple other people, talking about that movie. Those are all good picks. Every single one of his picks is in my top 15.
Mm-hmm.
They're great movies. I had one negative experience about Arrival, which I think I may have told some of you guys. I don't know if I told it on the air, though. And it was that I saw Arrival like a couple days after the election. I'm not going to get political, but I was really down. Especially since I'm like living in an area where everybody's just like, woo, about it, you know? And so I was really down and everything like that. I'm really just, you know, already was dealing with a lot of personal things. So like that kind of like took the wind out of me. everybody says, okay, you gotta go see Arrival. It'll give you hope. It's the movie you need to see right now. And it is. It's wonderful. It's so good. It's amazing. And as I'm leaving the theater, this loud guy stands up, says, "That just sucked. I don't get it. There weren't hardly any guns. Didn't even fight." Wow. And I was like, I'm like, "You motherfucker, you couldn't give me this one thing."
Nope. It was such a, not only a gorgeous movie cinematically, mm-hmm. The cinematography is just so symmetrical, so methodical. The pacing, while it was, a lot of people would probably say it was slow, I thought it was perfect. It just like slowly unveiled itself, and I never knew what was going to come next. And I was, even though it felt like it was slightly predictable, I still felt like I was engaged. Like I wanted it to go a certain way, and it ended up going that way, but I was glad it went that way.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, well, I mean, it's so wonderful just to see a movie where, I mean, it's just like, and it's a movie about the importance of listening and talking to each other and trying to understand one another. And then, of course, it gets into all these different things about that I'm not going to go into here because it would be way too spoilery for the people who didn't see it. It's just got all these amazing messages. And you were talking about the direction. This guy has directed a few notable films, none of which I had seen yet. I haven't seen Prisoners, thank you, Enemy, or Sicario. I hadn't seen any of those, and I'm sitting down at this movie, and I'm like, Jesus, this guy directed the shit out of this movie.
Is he making Blade Runner?
Doing Blade Runner, and he is in talks, though you can like take that with a grain of salt. He's also in talks for Dune. So,
whoa, I think that would be a good fit. This was one of those movies that I literally walked in because Amanda picked this, my girlfriend Amanda. And I walked in with zero expectations because while the trailers looked okay, I wasn't really like gung-ho to go see it. But like a half hour into that movie, I just looked at Amanda and said, "I love this." I just absolutely adored it. And I thought that way about all of the three movies on this list literally grabbed me. Like there was something about them that took me out of daily life and exported me. Like I was so engaged by all of them. And it's wonderful to have a year where there were three movies. There was more. I could probably listed five that literally made me forget about everything and transported me into their world. I love having movies do that. So,
yeah, I will say there were quite a number of films that I saw this year too that did that. Paul, any thoughts on Derek's picks, especially Arrival or Green Room or The Witch?
I haven't seen the Green Room. The Witch is on my list as well, so that I definitely enjoyed that pick. And I seen The Arrival, and I did thoroughly enjoy that movie. I thought the science was really nice. You actually got to experience science in science fiction, which I know that sometimes the trend with Interstellar is it's heading toward that, you know, The Martian, and I'm enjoying that trend, and I hope they continue that trend because it's the type of movie that I like to see for science fiction. But also, I do like to see the space opera every now and then too.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. For The Witch, we actually did the podcast episode on here. Paul, were you on that one?
Yes, I think I was.
Yeah. So if you want to catch Paul's thoughts on The Witch, you can check out that episode. But would you agree, probably one of the best horror films to come out this year? I know a lot of people, it was kind of a divisive film in the horror community. How'd you feel about it? Just a quick.
It exceeded my expectations, and that's that's why it hit my list. My list will be based on the ratio of expectation versus delivery.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Cool. And yeah, great picks there, Derek. I'll agree on all of those, especially The Arrival. That was on my list as well, actually. and so, which it should tell folks out there what type of film that is, because yeah, it was one of those films where I came out of it. It's one of those where you go, whew. And I was thinking about it 2 hours, 4 hours after the next day, thinking of the things in it, you know, and the cinematography in it. Definitely. You know, there's a lot of interesting things they did with the camera that I think some people didn't pick up on. And no, it's not an action-packed film, but there is a lot of tension in there, just involving a phone call. I'm not going to spoil it too much, but let's just say, just involving a phone call, it's actually a rather impressive way it was handled. And yeah, I think a lot of directors out there might have made a mess of it, but they kept this film that could have ran away from the director. Mm-hmm. I think he kept it really under control. And you look at this going, if not handled right, this can just spiral out of control and people won't be able to follow crap with it, you know. But yeah, Andrew, any thoughts on Derek's picks at all?
I agree with all of them, man. Mm-hmm. All the very good stuff, things that I really enjoy, Rid.
Cool.
Well, I was on like what? I did an episode of one of y'all about Green Room, did an episode mm-hmm. of one of y'all about the witch and yeah. Arrival, man. I just thought Charlie Sheen was amazing in that, you know.
wrong Arrival. That's okay. Good that you enjoyed that film. At least somebody did.
And they had backwards knees, man. You didn't
they
think did. Of it.
They had the backwards knees. So
did.
And Paul, since you mentioned it, what were your three picks? I think we already know one of them. So
yep, it's definitely The Witch. I mean, Witch. I also picked again based on the expectation to delivery ratio. Mm-hmm. I also thought that 10 Cloverfield Lane was a really good film.
That. That was from earlier this year, so I think a lot of people forgot that came out this year.
I'm sure.
So you had 10 Cloverfield Lane, The Witch, and what was the other one?
This is the one I probably will get a lot of groans for, but I really did like Captain America Civil War.
No groans here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no groans from this dude.
Oh, so you got a problem with Black Panther, you get a problem with me.
Yeah. I was going to say.
I was just really worried because, you know, with superhero films, people tend to say, oh, they're overdone. And I kind of did go into this film thinking it's going to be another one of those things. And I thought it was going to follow the same pattern that all the other Marvel films did. And then they didn't follow that pattern, and it threw me for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, oh wow, I did not expect that. I was expecting the super soldiers to happen,
right. And
that didn't. So it was cool.
Well, if they've listened to our episode, we did a podcast on 10 Cloverfield Lane as well as Civil War. So
you should definitely go see those to get more insight on why I'm saying. And with 10 Cloverfield Lane, it was just that closeness. I hadn't felt that kind of closeness since like Alien, where you just felt drawn into the space. Mm-hmm. And that's what was interesting to me is like, and that film, I really knew nothing about. It was just like, oh, this is going to be Cloverfield. And so I watched it and it was like, no, it wasn't. It was something totally different than what I expected. And I loved that part of that. So
we did dedicate a whole episode, but yeah, just my thoughts with 10 Cloverfield Lane, especially. I like that because you didn't know what was going on and because they managed to keep a film like that under wraps to where you actually had for a little bit the internet going, 10 Cloverfield, what? you know, that trailer came out and I saw the internet, especially the movie groups, explode going, what the hell is this film? How did they hide it from us? And I'm just smiling going, that's impressive in this day and age. You know, Scott, wouldn't you say that was one of the impressive things with 10 Cloverfield Lane is how they kept it under wraps, especially who was in it?
Yeah, I'm probably not the person to ask about 10 Cloverfield Lane because I didn't care for them because I didn't care for the movie.
I know.
But despite John Goodman being awesome as always, but yeah, well, that's something that, you know, Bad Robot You know, the production company Bad Robot, you know, J.J. Abrams' company there. They do that. They can somehow, they've somehow in this information age have managed to create a thing where they will either keep certain aspects of the production such a mystery that people just can't stop talking about them, or they will completely surprise you with something. I think the original Cloverfield was like that.
Yeah.
Where people had no idea what that movie was, and then there was a trailer, and then like 2 months later there was a movie. And people, and there was like websites and everything else. People were like, what the hell is it? And I like I said, I didn't care for the movie that much, but I will give him props for being able to be as clever and secretive in the advertising and create an interesting hype machine in this information age where it seems like you have to be the first in line to see every single movie, otherwise you're going to get spoiled for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that, like I said, 10 Cloverfield Lane, we did a whole episode, but that's what impressed me even before I saw the film, which I did really enjoy. You know, is how they kept it under wraps. Andrew, did you have any thoughts on 10 Cloverfield Lane or Civil War?
Y'all could get all my thoughts on 10 Cloverfield Lane on the episode we did, yes. Right?
Yep.
Captain America Civil War, you know, Black Panther.
Yeah, that was the highlight for me for Civil War, was seeing Black Panther in action. I really enjoyed that. It made me really, you know, can't wait for the solo movie for Black Panther after seeing him in Civil War. And Derek, how about you? Any thoughts on Paul's picks at all? You had a common one in The Witch, but I know you're a big comic book guy. The Civil War, that was a big hit with you too, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first time I went and saw it at the theater, I was kind of milked, like lukewarm to it. It was half of it was the theater experience was awful, and you can go to there's an episode Corey and I did about our experience on my radio show where it was just not a good experience. But I ended up, because I always do, I'm a huge, like you said, I'm a huge Marvel fan. I grew up with Marvel. I bought the Blu-ray, and upon the second viewing, I loved it. I think it's just like a perfectly balanced film. The story is so intricate, and we're to the point now with these Marvel movies where you have to have seen the other movies to really fully get what's all at stake here now at this point. And I loved it. I loved it. It feels like now we have a visual, like a visual representation, like in live action, of what comic book readers have been doing reading their entire lives.
Sure.
You know, I love it. I absolutely love Civil War. 10 Cloverfield Lane. I'm with Scott. I think it was a gimmick. I honestly, the movie didn't do much for me. I think the acting was really great, but I just really think the fact that it was a Cloverfield movie was an afterthought and a marketing gimmick. Because that really tainted the movie for me. You can say all you want about it being like a similar universe, in name only, spiritual sequel or whatever you want to label it, but it was a gimmick, and it left a really horrible taste in my mouth. So if it was the movie itself was okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It was okay. That's all I want to say about it.
Oh, that's no okay. none taken.
What's funny, the one I was worried about is the one that you guys liked. And the one I thought was like solid was like, no.
Well, this is a thing, Paul, is that Amanda and I were both pretty excited to see it because the trailers were really great. And then we just both walked out of it like,
huh?
Man, that kind of sucked.
Oh.
See, I'm not going to give mine now.
You say whatever, Mark. We hate each other because I didn't like Cloverfield Lane.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I,
He's exiting out Ice Age Collision Course right now.
Fucking Norm of the North. No, I'm just
It's not like we're talking about Batman versus Superman here, Mark.
You're supposed to say trigger warning before you say that.
No, you should have said trigger warning before Civil War, but you want to hear my thoughts on that, check out our episode on Civil War as well as Cloverfield Lane. All good picks though there. I think definitely Batman. So yeah, and Batman versus Superman and Apocalypse. We did episodes on all three. We won't go into that right now. Anyway.
trigger.
Yeah. So and then Scotty D, what are your top three for best?
My top three I am gonna pick the top three because there's because just I don't know what else to do, honestly. I will say that my number four was one of Andrew's as well. I should mention Ghostbusters, which was so much better than I ever imagined it could be. And I would personally, just me talking, I would advise anybody who hasn't seen it to see the theatrical cut instead of the extended, because I thought that that version had a lot better pace and the scenes just didn't go on and on with riffing and stuff. But that was a great movie. I saw that twice in the theater, loved it. Anyway, but my top three, I would say in third, Hell or High Water.
Oh, okay.
It's a really great movie. I'm not into like crime type movies and stuff like that. I think they've been done to death. But I saw this flick with I actually saw it with Cole Meredith. And we both just thought this was an incredible film. The acting was amazing. Chris Pine completely unrecognizable in the movie. Jeff Bridges turning in another great piece of work. You know, more Nick Cave at his best. I mean, it's just a really great film. Second would be The Neon Demon, which Nicholas Wending Refn, if I'm pronouncing it right. Let's face it. It's not like we haven't – the things the movie is saying, it's not like we haven't heard them said before. I could say the same thing about Drive, Fear X, Bronson, his other films. In this case, a thing that examines the obsession with beauty and image – and how people can – how it can change you and how people will do anything to take that from you and get some of it for themselves. I mean, we've heard that done before. It's just how he does a movie is – no one tells the story like he does. He is a really great visual artist and can and does things with his scripts and everything with just little minimal touches in the scripts and then putting it all up on the screen that really stay with you afterwards. I've felt that about virtually all his films. And in first place, just saw it last night, is La La Land.
I was waiting for someone to mention La La Land.
I was waiting for this movie. As soon as I saw that, I heard about the movie at the early part of the year. I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. And then as soon as I saw the trailer in August, I said, that's it. That's the movie I want to see. If I only get to see one, if someone told me right now, you can only see one film for the rest of the year, I'd say I'm waiting for that one then. Because that was the one I was waiting for. And sure enough, it's beautiful. I mean, it's the performances by Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are incredible. The music is great. Damien Chazelle just tells such a great story. He's really a gifted filmmaker that we need to keep an eye on. It's a musical, and yet it's not completely dark and it's not completely light. It's somewhere in between that conflict between the fantasy of expectations and the reality of life. And it's just a really beautiful film. I liked it, even though to go on what Derek was saying about his Civil War experience, I had a very bad film theater experience with it. So I'm going to have to actually see the movie again. I had the theater was packed last night. I had an old guy next to me who insisted on narrating the whole movie to his wife. Oh, now he's over there. now he's playing piano. And you know that. And like my friends on the other side said, yeah, next to me I had a smelly guy who was shelling and eating peanuts that he brought from home the whole night and elbowing with the ribs. Wow. Yeah, it was a really miserable theater experience. Wow. Even
you sure that wasn't Corey Udler?
It could have been. I should ask him. Like, tell me some details about him. Let's see if we can match up.
Man, during the holidays and shit, people go to movies that don't usually go to movies a lot of times, so they don't know what the fuck they're doing in there.
Oh yeah, and there are people in the row that were drinking and stuff like that. You know,
they're so feral. Like, people go to the movies so seldom now, for the most part. Man, it's like they don't know what. You know, they forgot their old manners and shit.
Yeah, but even through all of that, I still love this movie. And the more I think about it, the more I love it. And I'm definitely going to be going again. La La Land's a brilliant film.
Yeah, a lot of folks in the film circles that I follow and such have just been praising the film up and down. And I am looking forward to seeing it, and at the same time hesitant. But anyone else here see?
It's wonderful. I mean, you're telling me, people only go to the movies to get out of the cold anyway where you live. So I mean, you'll probably be okay, except for like a couple homeless people trying to sleep it off, and you can appreciate the movie without anybody shelling peanuts or narrating it.
That's true. We won't have that. Anyone else here see La La Land, Andrew?
No, I haven't been. Actually, I haven't been to movies in probably a week or so. I like Whiplash a lot. Like, his first movie, I thought it was really great. So I will definitely see it.
Yeah, Whiplash is one of those I still have to see.
Oh, it's great.
It's phenomenal.
Another one where when I first saw it, I said, hey, that was a really good movie. And then the more I think about it, like even like a year or two after the movie came out, I'm thinking, like, man, that was a good movie.
Dude, Whiplash is a masterclass in film editing. Mm-hmm. It is amazing.
Wait till you see this thing.
Yeah,
choreography and everything else. Wait till you see, and the composition of the shots. Wait till you see this.
I have a lot of movies I need to watch because I don't watch enough of them. So I need to watch more. I understand that. So, but those are all great. Scott, yeah, definitely heard great things about La La Land, and I'm hoping to check it out. Hopefully it comes here probably in January, but all excellent picks there, Scott. Too bad you had that bad theater experience.
I'm looking to correct it, you know. I've had a few like that down here. I couldn't even do a Lego movie because I couldn't even hear anything when I saw that because it was so chaotic. So, yeah, you know, you live and learn. It's like, uh-oh, there are people here. Maybe I should have not gone to the movies today.
And so we'll just skip my picks. We'll just move right on to the...
Oh, come on.
Oh, no way.
Come on. Let's hear it. Right, let's hear right, it. Right, I want to hear right, it. Henry Cavill. I get it.
No.
Angry Birds. Come on, Angry Birds.
Again, this is picking from the pot of films that I thought were the best of. That's why I asked everybody. They didn't have to bring their top three. So
you got pot?
Yeah, I do. long story.
My glaucoma is up. So
out of the films that I've watched, some of the best ones, the three I wanted to bring was, well, two of them were already mentioned for sure, Arrival and Witch. Are fantastic. So we've already discussed those. So some of the other bests that I have, for me, it's a tie. And no, we're not going to go through a whole list. Don't worry, Derek. It's not like
here we go again, Mark. Couldn't whittle down three. He's going to give his top 25.
No.
It's his show, man.
This is true.
So no, I just saw it recently, and it actually tied my other for favorite animated films. So it's two films I'll mention is obviously Kubo, which if you've heard the one episode we did, you can hear all my thoughts on Kubo. But basically, I think it's just a beautiful film and needed more recognition. And Andrew was kind enough to sit through that episode and hear me gush about it. And he talked about it too, but I think he more just let me gush about it. So, but I, that film still sticks with me, and I'm glad Andrew was on that show with me so I could talk about it, because it's just a beautiful movie. But another one I just saw recently is creeps, the name just escaped me now, is The Long Walk North, I think it's called, or The Long
Way North.
Long Way North. Thank you, Andrew. Yeah. The Long Way North. It's an animated French film, and it grabbed me as much as Kubo did with this story about Sasha, who's a girl for a high class Russian family, and this is set, you know, in the past, and there's the Tsar, and her grandfather was a famous explorer, and he was trying to discover the North Pole first for Russia, but he got lost, so she goes on this journey to find him, and she goes through all kinds of challenges and learning about real life, and it's a beautiful movie. Andrew got a chance, I think, to see it too. Wouldn't you say, Andrew, that film, such a strong female character, and just, isn't that a film that grabs you?
Yeah. I would say, man, if you're a fan of Tom Moore's stuff, the Secret of Kells, Song of the Sea, you're really going to like it. It was, Shout Factory is the U.S. distributor. So I saw it like in September or, you know, so it was before Halloween time. But I was like, if I could pre-order this, like when I walk out, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. I want, that's one I know is going to be a big hit in our house. One that we're going to want to watch a lot.
Shows you how much research I had done on it. I didn't realize he was the one that did Secret of the Kells.
No. I'm just saying, like the.
Oh, it was similar the style.
The animation style. The animation style. No, Tom Moore. God, I wish he would do a new movie. God, we've seen Song of the Sea so much, man. I mean, but
it's kind of that style.
Yeah, it's got that kind of feel to it. You know, it's there are some people that are doing really unique animation. Most of the animation done in the United States looks and feels basically the same. But when you get outside the U.S., there's so much innovation going on, so much artistry going on, because other countries treat animated not exactly like cartoons and kids stuff. Mm-hmm. They treat it like a real movie. So, you know, it's not a surprise that a lot of them are. I mean, they're some of the best films that's being made now is animated from other countries like that.
I mean, don't let the subtitles fool you. I mean, it was a fantastic film. I loved the artistry, the different pictures. Pictures were done more like paintings. You could see brush strokes and such. But even beyond that, the characters in that, it was the second animated film this year that really pulled me in. As much as I liked Moana, which was a beautiful movie, you know, Kubo really pulled me in as well, and then this one struck me just as much as Kubo did. And it's another, you know, a journey story, of a slightly different kind. But yeah, it's one you should keep a lookout for when Shout Factory gets it out, because I'm hoping a lot of people see it, because it really is a beautiful film. And it is it's interesting. It's in French, and it's about Russians. So, you know, that right there puts it in a little bit unique spot. So, Kubo, like I said, you want to hear my thoughts on that, check out our episode. And the other one that I'm going to mention as far as a best film as far as entertaining for me goes, I'm going to put it out there. It was a comic book movie.
I think I know what it is.
It was Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Doctor Strange. Hey, did you see in 3D or regular?
Oh, good one.
I saw him cut both. Yes, how was, man, what do you think in 3D? Wasn't that not a trip to end all trips, man?
3D was definitely a trip.
Bananas, man.
Yes, and the reason I enjoyed Doctor Strange and why it was probably my best of as far as comic book films go, as much as I laughed at Deadpool and watched a number of comic book films this year, which you can hear me ramble about those, Doctor Strange I loved because it's the most recent Marvel film that felt like kind of its standalone film, similar to Ant-Man, to where you did have a few references to the, you know, the ones we've been beaten over the head with forever, but at the same time it felt like it was on its own and it hung on its own, and that's what I loved. And it was completely different. It is impressive that they were able to pull this film off that they did and sell it to the comic book fans. And I was really worried about how they were going to sell the mysticism and the magic end of it, because those who just follow the MCU, I will say Doctor Strange is probably completely different from what you've seen in the past with it. But Cumberbatch is fantastic as Strange. You know, I as much controversy as there was with the casting, I thought everybody did fantastic in it. They handled the material. It was entertaining. It got dark and serious in spots. Yet it also did have some humor in it as well. Really solid, fun story. And yeah, by the end of it, I came out going, that was a ride. Damn. And yeah, it's probably one of my top Marvel films as well. So Doctor Strange is probably, is going to be one of my best of for 2016 as well. We're going to ask Derek quick. Doctor Strange, how'd you feel about it, sir?
Dude, it was great. Loved it. I saw it in 3D as well. I still think the best 3D this year that I went and saw was Ghostbusters. I still think the gimmick they did with that breaking frame and all that stuff, it was wonderful. And as this year, for some reason, has changed my stance on 3D movies completely. There's been some really, I think they're really doing a great job now with the 3D that they weren't a few years back. And some of the movies that I thought were great were the Doctor Strange and Ghostbusters. But I still think the best comic movie of the year was Deadpool. It was just so good. It was just so funny. And it was spot on for what I thought a Deadpool movie was going to be. I've watched it a bunch of times. And it's still as good every single time I watch it.
Oh, yeah. And I loved Deadpool as well. But for me, out of the most recent films, I'd say Strange was just a little bit above it. But I completely dug Deadpool as well. That had me in stitches and hurting painfully. So
yeah.
I would say that Deadpool might be the most rewatchable of the comic book movies from this year. But yeah, I do think Doctor Strange is probably the best comic book movie I saw this year.
Yeah, it was
really good. And people keep saying that, oh, there's too many of them. It's that's all they make anymore. If you look at like a landscape of what 400 movies that get released, they're about maybe at their worst like 10, 15. Which is way more than it's ever been done before. But if you kind of treat it as its own genre, there's really no, it's really not a huge percentage. It's just that since every single one is a tentpole movie, they get a lot of attention, you know? But I mean, it's not like that's all they're making, you know? So,
Strange for me was top. And someone here already mentioned Ghostbusters 2 was one of the best of. For me, laughed heartily, went with the whole family. We all enjoyed it, from my two teenage boys to my wife to I. We all sat, and it was a film we could all sit down, and we all laughed at the same time. We all just we bonded. It was great, and that film is just fantastic. I don't care what anyone says. It's a lot of fun.
And this will end part one of our Best of Worst of 2016 episode. Thank you for listening. Please check out part two, where we give our worst of 2016. Also, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. You can check us out at specialmarkproductions.com for all our archived episodes. And please subscribe to us on iTunes. Rate us and like us there. It always helps us out. Now, on to the worst of 2016.